where the wind comes sweeping down the plain. And the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Scott and I like to talk to the moderators of the chat and kind of get an idea of where the chat is supposed to go and what your expectations are of it. So let's start with who you are and where we can find you on the Twitters.
Okay. My name is Crystal Golding Ross. I work for the Janine Rambolt College of Education at OU. I'm a staff member there, and I'm also a PhD student in educational studies. And then I'm on Twitter at Crystal, KrystalGr80.
Okay, so we thought there was a possibility your last name was Grady. Scott and I last week, if you listen to the Student Leadership Podcast, you might hear us going, Crystal Grady. Oh, yeah, okay.
No problem.
That's funny. Okay, so how long have you been participating in the OCLA Ed Chats?
I've actually been a lurker. I'm not a P-12 public school teacher, and so sometimes those chats aren't necessarily particularly relevant to me, but I like to see the conversations and look at what people are thinking about their schools and their students, so on and so forth.
All right, great. And so you've been a lurker. What made you decide to reach out and moderate a chat now?
Well, Annie Beck, actually. She approached me about possibly moderating a chat, and I told her I wanted to do one on the school-to-prison pipeline because it's something I'm really passionate about.
And so tell us what that means to you. What is the school-to-prison pipeline?
And the school-to-prison pipeline is a phenomenon in which some students in some schools are disproportionately suspended or subject to harsher discipline, which pulls them out of school. And we know that when kids are out of school, they're more likely to get in trouble and so on and so forth. And so that leads them into this school-to-prison pipeline. And they're more likely to be subject to juvenile justice system, which in turn means that they're more likely to get in trouble as adults.
Mm, yeah. So I have a very direct experience with this. My first year teaching with Epic Charter Schools, there was a kiddo who was a known kind of drug dealer, kind of gangster, but still in school kiddo. And he was suspended for 180 days. From one district, I'm not going to name out the district, tried to then get a transfer into our school. And because of, I don't know if it's a law or what, because of that suspension, he couldn't transfer into our school. And 2 weeks later ended up committing a felony and is in jail for the next 10 years. That was, I mean, that was 6 years ago. And I remember it being a 15 year sentence. So,
yeah.
I mean, and there's nothing saying he wouldn't have done that if he were in our school, you know, but there could have been a chance.
Right. Right. There's an awful lot of research that shows that for each suspension, each out of school suspension that a child has, they are less likely to graduate. So it's a compounding factor. So if you have a kid who's suspended from school for one day here and there, each suspension reduces the likelihood that they will graduate.
Mm, yeah. So your questions this week, are they going to make teachers pause and think? Are they going to make administrators get a gut check? Or, I mean, are we staying pretty light in the topic?
I don't think you can be light in the topic.
Yeah, I'm thinking so too.
Yeah, so I think the goal is to encourage introspection and reflection and to start looking at school policies and get people involved in, okay, so what are we doing that may be feeding kids into this pipeline? Unintentionally, a lot of times it's not anything that people are doing intentionally. Implicit bias is an issue, so, you know, professional development for teachers and school administrators, just to make sure that they are aware of the ways in which implicit biases can manifest in the way that students are disciplined.
So that brings up another conversation. Did you lurk on the racism chat or participate in the racism chat?
No, I didn't. I didn't have the opportunity to look at that, but I need to go back and look at the archive.
For sure. That was one chat, and then the Indian Ed chat brought up a little bit of, do you think there's bias in racism? We've got another podcast that I'm doing with a student, and Vanessa Perez at V Parisi on the Twitters was our special guest on that one. And it just is, I feel like there is, I don't want to call it racism necessarily, but I mean, because discipline is discipline. And I think that we do need to hold expectations for all students, but there, it does seem to be a predominantly Black or a predominantly poor issue. Do you think?
Yes, absolutely. And the research holds that out. There is the Oklahoma School to Prison Pipeline report that is very eye-opening. And there's also another one that was done by the American Bar Association. The statistics are really sobering in terms of students with disabilities that are disproportionately Black or brown students. And so they're more likely to have disabilities or to be labeled as having disabilities, particularly subjective, you know, emotional disturbance and things like that. And so those students are more likely to be subject to harsher punishments in schools. And so this is where, you know, kind of implicit biases come in, because there are different expectations for different students. And so it ends up being kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way.
So I do have my own bias, and I do feel like fathers matter. In all families, doesn't matter the race. But do you think that that holds true? Do you think it's a lack of father presence in some of this? Or what do you think the root cause for that could be?
Well, I don't necessarily think it's fathers, because there are some families that don't have fathers, particularly LGBTQ families, right?
Okay.
And so you may have two mothers, or you may have two fathers. And so then can you say that, oh, well, this student doesn't have a mother, you know, so on and so forth. So, I mean, I really think it's about opportunity. Kids who don't have sufficient nutrition at home are more likely to act out. They're more likely to have cognitive delays that feed them into disabilities, right? And so those are disproportionately Black and brown kids. So it all goes back to kind of the socioeconomic status of the surrounding area, and then the ways in which implicit bias comes through in the way that students are punished or the way that their behavior is perceived.
All right. What's your favorite question that you're going to pose, or do you want to let the cat? Well, I guess the cat will be out of the bag, because by the time this airs, we will have already had the chat. What's your favorite question for the chat?
Probably one about zero tolerance policies.
Okay. And so where do you stand on zero tolerance policies?
I am opposed to zero tolerance policies because they, again, disproportionately affect certain students more than others. You know, zero tolerance policies on bullying, for example, doesn't take into account context. It doesn't take into account what kids experience at their homes. It doesn't take into account all of these issues like food insecurity and the way that that manifests, disability status, childhood trauma. It doesn't take any of those things into account. And so we're pulling kids out of schools because of a behavioral issue that maybe could be addressed in a different way, like counseling or, you know, kind of restorative justice kind of processes.
Sure. I try not to speak about my school too much, because my school is just different. It's not for every student, and it's probably not for every student that's being suspended here. But we at EPIC are able, our teachers are able to go to the student's home, go to the library, and I mean, we don't have a suspension because the kiddos, they're just not in a classroom environment. So even if there is a discipline issue, I'm one-on-one with that student, and it's not affecting every other kid. And I just feel like, other schools, I wish there was a way to adopt a more blended model where these kiddos could still be in school and still have a teacher without necessarily being kicked out. Because what are they doing when they're kicked out? They're watching TV or going out and doing more harm. You know what I'm saying? Then studying and, you know, they just have nothing to do now. And I feel like with our school, at least we could still give them something to do, give them schooling, give them a goal to work towards. So I wish there were more schools out there that could adopt a more blended model.
Yeah, I agree. And then, and not to mention when kids are not in school, if they're suspended, then they're missing out on the instruction as well. So when they come back, they may already be behind.
Well, and they may have been behind before they, you know, got into trouble the first time, and that's why they're lashing out.
Exactly, exactly. So when kids don't know the information, they may get frustrated, and that manifests in problematic behaviors. And I say that in air quotes.
Sure, sure. Well, gosh, anything else you want us to know before heading into the chat tonight?
Not necessarily. I would just encourage everyone to really reflect on their practices and just stop and think for a second before reacting when a kid is acting out. You know, just stop and think for just a couple of seconds about, okay, so what's going on with this kid? What's the actual story? And then just to try and encourage dialogue.
I really hope that we have a healthy dialogue tonight. I feel like sometimes these chats can lead to, and I mean, the people participating in this Okla Ed chat every week, I mean, they are involved. They are ideal. I wish that we had a couple of prisoners that had reflection that could join in. I wish that we had, I don't know. I just feel like sometimes these conversations tend to float towards the cliche or the best possible answers or what people want to hear. And I really just hope that there are some of those people out there that are like, I don't know, that give their opinion, even though it might not be popular, so that we can have a real discussion. Because I know that there are teachers out there who don't think that it's necessarily a black or brown thing, who don't think that it's a poor thing, who don't think that it's, you know what I'm saying, and that it is a discipline thing, and then what do? We can't keep those kids in the classroom. You know, I hope that the conversation doesn't lean towards cliche or what people think that they need to say.
Right. I think sometimes that ends up being pretty evident.
Okay.
You know, kind of a Pollyanna approach.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that never happens at my school.
Right.
We all know that that's baloney.
Obviously, because then there wouldn't be reports.
In every school.
Indeed. Indeed. So I really look forward to tonight's conversation, and I may try to play devil's advocate on some of this stuff because I want to see real feeling tonight. Mm.
And, you know, honestly, I would appreciate that. I hope there may be a couple of people who play devil's advocate in that conversation.
All right. Well, thank you again so much, Crystal, for taking the time to have this conversation with me. And we'll see how tonight's chat goes.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. And I look forward to future conversations about things that matter in schools.
Me too.
All right. Welcome back, educators. How was world domination last week? Wow.
Sometime, you know, that's what we're doing. One kilo at a time, building them up, sending them out.
This is the Okla Said podcast, where we rehash everything that was said on Sunday night's Twitter chat. I, of course, am Erin Barnes, and you can find me at ebarnes73. We also have Scott Hazelwood, who is at Teach From Here. Hey, Scott.
Hello. Pretty exciting chat, as we had on Sunday. Unfortunately, we had a late reschedule soccer match, so I wasn't able to actually be in chat on Sunday as we were family duties called, but it was a very interesting chat hosted by Crystal Golding Ross, and you can find her on the Twitters at CrystalGR80, Crystal Garrady, and it was the school-to-prison pipeline. Very fascinating.
Yeah, which several people thought it could have been other things. They thought that the title was left, they thought it was going to be like the privatization of prisons or, you know, something like that and making comparisons. Somebody else thought it was going to be, I can't remember. But I do remember seeing a few people saying, oh, this is what the chat is about. It was very interesting. Let's dive in. You want to?
Question one? Yeah, let's do it. Dive in.
Has the school to prison pipeline been discussed in your school or district? If so, what was the focus? If not, how can you start the conversation? And Scott, I just remember A1, no, nobody's talking about this, at least not at these levels, not at the level of the people who were participating in the chat. It's not something that's being regularly discussed. Linda Hassler-Reed, who is at Linda Hassler, said, not enough. How can we miss the correlation between number 50 in ed spending and number 2 in the nation on incarceration rate? She said, or are we now number 1? You know, I did not know that statistic. I knew the number 50 in ed spending. I did not know we were number 2 in incarceration rate.
I wasn't aware that we were number 2 either, but I know that in Oklahoma, in fact, we as a state realized that we have an issue. I do know that incarceration rates are an issue because there was a state question in October, or in the November elections, there were right. 2 questions that went together that were overwhelmingly supported by the citizens, which now it's my understanding in the House, the state House, are trying to undo those 2 laws.
They're trying to tweak it up so that, yeah, they can get around it, I suppose.
Right. So I was familiar with at least some of the information that we, you know, had a large incarceration rate. I wasn't aware it was number 2. And Linda Hassler-Reed also had some other good tweets last night. So if you go back in through the chat, she had some very good insights. I really liked Mrs. Waters' English. I liked what she had to say with this answer. She said, we haven't discussed this, but I have been reading and researching, including the article linked earlier, on my own time. And the article she's referring to is the one that was shared out by Crystal Grady as part of the chat. So I think it's interesting that this is an interesting enough item that needs to be researched, and here's a teacher doing it on her own.
Yeah, no, that's great. And after the chat, I had Andre Daughtry sent me several great links to just not necessarily the school to prison pipeline, but contributing factors that lead into. So I'm really excited to get some reading done on my own there as well.
Yeah, and at Andre Daughtry is a good guy to chat with. He is excellent to talk to. Super nice. Second question is, what do you think are the key contributing factors to the school to prison pipeline? And I myself am not super fluid with this topic, so I probably wouldn't have participated overly anyway in the chat, but I really liked what Kenny Ward had to say at Kenneth Ward. He said, we have to find ways to make a connection and show these students a better way. It's very hard because the other influences are so powerful. And I think he has some good points there. And sometimes the situation that we are living in can create very difficult circumstances for us as educators to overcome individually on our own. We need a whole community focus on helping our students succeed and being the best that they can be.
You know, and you and I were talking about this before, but because of this podcast, I have tried to be very involved. And I blindly answered. I did not quote anything or I wasn't writing a report. I myself had put fatherless boys, parents' lack of involvement in education, and, you know, some of the things that Kenny's alluding to with other influences, just bad choices. It was not a very popular answer. But Natasha Jefferson at Jefferson_first had a really good answer. Several people had retweeted and liked this. Suspensions, expulsions, lack of mentors, lack of consistency with consequences amongst different populations of students. And I think she is probably referring to how students of color, black, brown, yellow, red, get more referrals to the office than white people, white kids. And so that is what she was talking about there. But I do remember at V. Parisi, Vanessa had said the consistency thing is huge. We need to stay consistent. And if you break the rule, then this is the consequence, regardless of age and race.
Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting. I think also I saw later on in the chat, it wasn't in response to question two, but there's one of our teachers here in Oklahoma who's just really passionate with dyslexia and special needs kids, and she had shared some information that special needs populations are also overly represented in some of these situations as well. So not just students of color, but as well as students that have different learning disabilities that prevent them, you know, from being the best that they can be, because we just have a hard time helping some of those kids and getting them in a position where they can find success and have success. I do know that there was a tweet that was shared last night as well, you know, as we're talking about some of these things, contributing factors and such. There's also, you know, some cultural norms that are different across cultures. So telling a student to look you in the eye while you speak to them may be against their cultural norm, and that could be something that's difficult for a student to do. But then when they don't do that, now you're offended because they aren't doing what you asked them to do. Or some cultures are really loud, some aren't, some are super quiet, some work individually, some work in groups. And so I think sometimes when you put all these different cultures together, it can just creates a pretty exciting environment at times.
No, I agree. I saw another tweet along the same lines. The kid that you think is loud, that may be the only way they're heard at home.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, we definitely have to keep these things in our brains as we're teaching these youngsters.
Yeah, for sure. Question three. Question three.
Which of the factors are present in your school or district? What are you doing to address them in your role as an educator?
So this question is actually referring to then the responses from question two.
Correct.
And,
correct.
Double down. Funston at Funston WM, who hosted chat a couple weeks ago on another minority population here in Oklahoma about Indian education, which I really enjoyed that chat, by the way. I just felt like I learned a lot. I learn a lot in all of these. But he said previously worked on suspension rates. Civil rights report to see school numbers, partnered with mentor programs, etc. And I thought that was a great answer because sometimes it's things that we don't, like he's mentioning here, that, you know, suspension rates, but also the civil rights reports to see school numbers. I thought that was an excellent idea just to give us a better view of what's happening with our students.
Yeah. At Lavender, answer three, she said, we don't see a lot of parents and we are in a poverty zone. I try to show support and encourage my students every day. And, you know, having that parental involvement is big as a teacher. If we can get the parent to be a participating role in what we're trying to do with their kiddos, then I feel like we've already overcome a huge hurdle. So we've got to get those parents involved in any way, shape, or form. And that's all done through relationships. We've got to create better relationships.
And we need to figure out ways to meet parents where they are. Some parents have jobs that take them late into the evening, and it's hard for them to support kids at home in the evening. So is there another way we can meet that teacher in a different way to help them also pour into their child when they're not working those late hours? You know, what ideas are out there to help our schools meet those needs? You know, we always have parent-teacher conferences. You know, it's always like 4 to 8 p.m. in the evening. Well, that automatically eliminates some of our parents from being able to participate. So is there another way that we can get those parents to work third shift, maybe pull them into the school earlier in the day where they can volunteer or something like that, if that's a possibility?
Now, I got into hot water whenever I had said working parents is no excuse. And I didn't mean it as in like end all be all. It's so hard to have a conversation in 140 characters. I was trying to say that, like, at Epic, we do rolling parent-teacher conferences. I mean, we have parent-teacher conferences whenever the parent wants to, not just at, you know, this month or this time. And so our parent-teacher conferences can happen at 6 o'clock in the morning. They can happen at 8 o'clock at night, but they can happen at 4 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, like a traditional, you know, parent-teacher conference might happen. And you're right. We do have to find a way to partner with those overnight working parents who are out trying to support their families.
Sometimes it's tough. Question four, is cultural competency training mandatory for personnel in your school or district? What does it include?
So I saw a tweet, and I don't remember who it was from. They said that watching like 13th and having these kind of conversations should be as mandatory as bloodborne pathogens, you know? And it was very apparent from this conversation that happened Sunday night that that's kind of, I mean, without being snarky, we do. We need more of that in our working vocabulary. We need to be able to address some of these issues without stepping on eggshells, without feeling like we're going to offend somebody. I inadvertently offended with possible trigger words what I wanted. I loved what Andre Daughtry said, only if it's authentic. Nobody wants a training from people who think that they are the great hope to SOC. And I'm not sure what SOC is.
Students of color.
Oh, gosh, thank you. But that's true. If it's authentic. And, you know, we all cringe whenever we're like, oh, bloodborne pathogens, mm-hmm. because, you know, we don't want this conversation to turn into that. But there does need to be a working conversation happening regularly.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, and he later tweeted, too, if you think learning is, and he quoted some of the, he tweeted some of the movies Andre did. If you think it's, oh, or like Dangerous Minds or Lean on Me, he goes, no, that's not it. There's more.
Right. Know,
there's more. So at Stephanie, the Steph Hinton, Stephanie Hinton said, I don't know the answer to this question, but I do think it should be an ongoing PD as well as part of college coursework. I can say that I never took a diversity course until I started working on my PhD, and it was required. And I was just amazed at how much I didn't, I don't know if ignorant is the right word to use here. I think I was aware of it, but just not paying it any attention. And that course was really super challenging for me because it helped, it just really helped me try and see things through a different lens, and to understand how much basically privilege I have as who I am. So it was really challenging, and it gave me eyes to see, I guess, that there are so many more viewpoints than mine, and all of these other viewpoints are valid, and that we just have lived these different experiences.
Yeah, there were a lot of books that came up at this time. I remember, I know I had tweeted out, one of my favorites was Whatever It Takes, and it was written by Paul Tough, but it's about Jeffrey Canada. He is the creator of Harlem Children's Zone and Baby College out in Harlem. And then another one was Black Students, White Middle Class Teachers. And it just breaks down some of the things that white middle class teachers just don't see. Like you said, you're aware of things, but we don't necessarily pay attention to things, or it's in the back of our mind and just not something we're constantly thinking about. But like my trigger word, which was in no way, shape, or form supposed to be something disrespectful, obviously created some sort of I don't even know the word. There was anger going on around some of my words, and it was, you know, totally, it was implicit. I mean, it was I didn't say these things meaning them. I mean, and this is where words have true meaning, and we probably need to be more mindful of our words. But
your several intention books wasn't to offend. Right.
Indeed, yeah. But several books were coming up, and I think that several of these books should be available to teachers, not just of you know, white skin, but of all teachers. Mm-hmm. And then Andre and I also had an ongoing conversation. He sent me links about needing teachers of color, but not for the reasons that you might think. And so, you know, when we talk about the effects and mandatory training and stuff, if it's not out there, we have to find it ourselves. And I think you and I should probably link a few resources that we know of, as well as some of the articles that were given to us in this Twitter, in this podcast, so that we can push them out for other people.
No, that's a really good idea. We'll make sure and add that in the show notes. So we'll add in there the links then that came out from Andre and some of the other people that participated. And then if there's a link that you think can help all of us to better work with and understand all the diverse cultures that we work with to try and eliminate this school-to-prison pipeline, add that link in the comments section and we'll be sure and share it with everybody.
For sure. Question five. Yeah. How do you think implicit bias might affect your judgment when dealing with subjective behaviors like disruption and disrespect?
Man, so, this is these are tough questions, man.
They are really tough questions. I honestly Googled implicit bias. I know bias, but I had to remind myself implicit, explicit. And this It's a subconscious bias. It's something that you're not thinking of, but you say something like I did with the trigger words, and you don't mean anything by it, but it can cause a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. And so we all have implicit biases. I grew up in a fatherless home. My husband has had over 100 foster kids come in and out of his home in 20 years. I would say that we have a pretty good history of parental distraction and neglect in my forefront, in my bias. And this was where a lot of my tweets were coming from the other night, not from school cases. But, that implicit bias, then whenever I am talking with parents, I need to remember I've got a little more history than maybe these parents coming into my parent-teacher conferences. And I need to be aware of that as I am talking with these parents.
Yeah, super important to try and understand why you're thinking what you're thinking. And Andre even shared later, I think this was after the chat, that he had left the hospital and was on the elevator down. And when he got on the elevator, the man put his arm around his wife and the wife held on to her purse. And I got to meet Andre one time and at Ed Camp OKC for just a few minutes. And I didn't feel threatened by him.
No, like, he is not a threatening black man with nice. His bow tie yes. and huge smile.
Oh, man. So anyway, but that exists. And I know that I have mine and you have yours and we all try and work with it. I really liked what Shelby Jr. 3 had to say. She said, I had a student who my brain told me to be legitimately scared of and my heart said to love. It was certainly complicated. She went on to say later that she chose to love this kid and then it made a huge difference.
Ken Ward had said, we all have bias, just need to think before we act and constantly learn where our students are coming from. Understanding why is powerful.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Question six, more and more zero tolerance policies are being instituted in districts and schools. Many of these policies require OSS or out of school suspension as punishment. Do you exercise any discretion as to whether students are referred to for disciplinary action based on these policies? Why or why not? That is a meaty, meaty, meaty question. And we had 140 characters.
It could have been broken into three or four questions right there. At Epic, we don't have out of school suspension. I mean, all of our kids are pretty much at home. So we don't have kind of the same problems. And typically when we're meeting with our families, the parents are there. So it's if there is a disrespect issue, we can all talk about it right then and there as to why we thought that might be disrespectful. And I haven't worked in a actual classroom for, about 7 years. So I don't know how things have changed in the last 7 years, but definitely zero tolerance policies, I think they're hurtful, man. I've seen third graders suspended for bringing toy guns to school. And that zero tolerance on guns, it means toy guns too. But gosh, third grade is really young for something like that, you know?
I agree. I think we just have to be so careful with zero tolerance because of people are people. I make mistakes. And let me tell you, if zero tolerance had been around for some of the mistakes I had made, who knows, you know, what impact that could have had on me. And I think there's a lot of literature that indicates that that these zero tolerance policies are not handled in a way that is equitable across the student population.
Right.
And that was one of the tweets that came out last night from Claudia Swisher. And she had, and maybe it was Andre, because they had had a conversation, I think, under one of your tweets, Aaron. But it was showing three kids trying to watch a baseball game. And there's a difference between equitable and I can't remember if it was the word was just or fair or whatever it was, but all the kids were standing on these different boxes, and so one kid could see he didn't need a box, one kid stood on a box to see over the fence, one kid stood on a box to look through the holes to see, and that was fair because each kid had a box or didn't, but equitable then was different because the kid that was looking through the little holes and couldn't see over the fence, well, he got two boxes to see over the fence. And then the other student had one box because that was all the boost he needed to see over the fence, and then everybody could, so that was equitable. And fair and equitable are not always the same thing.
You know, he is taking that to another level. He's going to have a follow-up Twitter chat to this Twitter chat. I feel we kind of felt like this conversation needed to continue, and they're booked out quite a ways, but we're squeezing it in on the 21st. He's adding a third picture where instead of having boxes, which you can fall off of, it's removing that fence. And it was liberation through removal of the fence.
Yeah,
so
awesome.
I'm interested to see how that goes. I know Melinda Parks, which is at MCAPS Parks, she said, I'd like to think it doesn't. Or if it does, it's the result of cultural ignorance on my part. But I worry about it. And I think we all have to. Zero tolerance, there's not room for mistakes.
Mm-mm. And Mrs. Waters English, at Waters English, said, zero tolerance policies are evil. We should be compassionate. We should be serving kids, not finding ways to boot them out.
I mean, yeah, and who educates the kids when they're out? Nobody.
Right.
The streets educate the kids. Judge Judy, maybe, educates the kids. You know, I mean, nobody's educating them. So these kids are getting farther and farther behind, which means they're going to be in more trouble when they do get to come back. You know, it's this cycle.
Right. And some kids depend on school for food and nourishment. And if those kids are out because of zero tolerance, because it wasn't, because they were being a kid, now they're not eating, and that's not good either. As everybody knows, research strongly shows that there's a correlation between nourishment and students' engagement at school, that students need to eat.
I'm going to be a little snarky here, but does Betsy know that?
I'm going to say, I don't know.
Sorry. Question 7. Do you want to move on?
Yes, question 7. Research indicates that restorative justice models are more effective than punishment models for improving school climate and keeping kids out of the pipeline. Has there been any discussion about this in your school or district? How could you start this conversation or push the initiative forward?
So at Kenneth Ward, his answer to this was, this is what I've been talking about all night. We can't break the cycle unless we teach these kids better ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, where do you start with that? I mean, it really, that is a great piece. And this is one of the things I love about Okla Ed. We have great ideas, but where's the action? And what action, like what's the first step on this?
Yeah,
indeed.
What is the first step? And I think Josh Flores, he does a podcast called Podcasts on Your Plan, and he talked with some people at Santa Fe South, I think, that do restorative justice. And I had never heard of restorative justice until I listened to the podcast, and I was just fascinated by how they're handling issues that come up between students and discipline and problems and things like that. And it sounded like a really, really great way to go about. I've never been a part of a restorative justice system, but it sounded great. Like it sounded like a really good way to help everybody understand choices and decisions and implications from those things. It was really good.
Sure.
I kind of like, and this didn't necessarily answer the question, although it does a little bit. I really liked what Amy Bednarz had to say at Amy BB Ednarz. She said, I'm concerned because districts here in Massachusetts bring in police officers to keep kids in check. I think it sends a bad message. And this comes back to the punish part. It's the opposite of restorative justice if the teachers aren't involved in the process of helping students understand how to make better decisions when it comes to these kinds of issues.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, there need to be consequences, but you don't need it to be a stick every single time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
All right. So, did you have a favorite question?
I did, and I didn't put it. I didn't get it in there. Let me see. My favorite question was reloading this page.
I really liked the one on the mandatory training. I had never thought about it needing to be a mandatory training before, but this question and the answers that followed really opened my eyes on how much we need to have this conversation.
It's a hard conversation. I think people are scared of it because it's so hard. Obviously, emotions get involved and it becomes challenging because people have some passion with their experiences. And I think I personally am not a huge fan of confrontation, even in my own home. I hate having an argument with my wife. Like some people love to argue. I don't. I can't stand it. And so I think, it's an uncomfortable conversation for me because I don't want to offend. And then if I do offend, I don't want to have to get in that argument of trying to defend what I said without meaning to offend. It's just, it's tricky. I think my favorite. Go ahead. You first.
Go ahead. No, I was just thinking along that same lines. If we come to the table with an answer, I feel like we need to back it up with why we're coming to this, because I think several people in the chats, in Oklahoma, we have very suburban areas. We have very rural areas. I was coming into it with my own biases, obviously, and my own experiences, where a teacher from like Dibble may come in where they know that many of their kids, there is a high drug rate in Dibble of parents on drugs. And so if they're coming in and they're coming into this conversation with all of those kids in mind, it's different from somebody who's coming in from a predominantly black school or a predominantly white school or a predominantly rural school. I feel like we need to explain our answers a little better. And it's just really difficult to do in 140 characters without also then hurting feelings.
Yeah, and I think on a question, definitely on a chat like this, being able to be a bit open-minded in what's being said, because we've all engaged with people that we just aren't communicating with correctly on Twitter, and a lot of that comes down to I know you, we've hung out together, we've been to conferences together, I know Aaron, but I may not know somebody that I tweet with who lives in California or Washington. And so being able to try and communicate an idea through 140 characters is tough, but it's a start. And it may lead to something where resources can be exchanged. And I might not ever agree with that person in Washington or California, but we've traded resources now. I'm not going to say terrible things about them, but maybe I'll read what they have and maybe I'll change my mind on that initial stance. But I think conversations need to be allowed to breathe and grow without getting so uptight that we just can't communicate on some of these things. Obviously, there are some raw emotions here. My favorite question for this one was the zero tolerance policies. I just think that there's a way to do better other than zero tolerance. There's a better way, right?
Right. All right, Boom Sauce tweet of the night, Scott, go.
Hold on, I'm pulling it up right now.
Yeah!
I loaded it up on a different computer.
But
I do have a
funny
poll. Okay, it came from Trey Savage, or Trace Savage, I don't know. He's at Thrice Savage. he said, have sobering convo. He had a sobering convo with at Dr. John Thompson on how institutions get in the way of kids' best interests in Knucklehead, such failure by us, quote unquote, adults. I thought that was great. I have a ton of respect for Dr. John Thompson. He taught in some tough schools. He's written some books on what he's done. And he is really an advocate, strong advocate of the inner city school child. And for him to say that, that just really resonated with me because I have a great deal of respect for at Dr. John Thompson.
Well, and we never want to fail kids, but we are obviously doing it by the busload, and they're headed to prison.
Yeah. And I've shared before, I'm not a fan of our current system, the structure of it. I think it's not set up very well. It's set up in a very, very old fashioned single room schoolhouse sort of institution, and learning is more robust than that. It's more, you can't limit learning to just that situation.
Or just that hour, you know, from 7 to 3 or, you know, 8 to 4.
Right.
We've got to find a way to push out and break down the walls of, yeah, what we know is education right now.
100%.
My boom sauce tweet of the night was from at Waters English. And she said, it was a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson, actually. The great teacher is not the man who supplies the most facts, but the one whose presence we become different people. Mm-hmm. But the one who's in whose presence we become different people. And that's what I aspire to be. I want to be that person who creates change, who helps the kids become different people.
Yeah. Whew. Tough podcast, Aaron.
It really was.
Tough conversation.
Next week, EduPassions.
Passion EDU.
Passion EDU. Thank you.
Passion EDU.
I got it backwards. And that's going to happen at 8 o'clock on Sunday night.
As always. Okla Ed Chat is every Sunday at 8.
Exactly.
It's hosted by our good friend, Fat Cat artist Drew Robinson. I think she's probably going to have some super amazing things to share.
I do too. I've been to a few of her sessions at Ed Camps, and I just love this gal.
Yeah, her brain is on a different wavelength.
For sure. All right.
All right, educators, you know what to do. Go out and dominate the world.
Saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. Okay.